Hi listeners, and welcome to the David Crid podcast. In this episode, we hear from artist Vusi Beauchamp about his works on show in his solo exhibition, The Cult of One, Part 1, which is taking place in Johannesburg. Here we hear more about the paintings on show in this first edition of the project, ahead of his second edition, which will be taking place in our gallery in New York. The exhibition seeks to interrogate current societal ills against the backdrop of post-colonial, post-apartheid, and post-Rainbow Nation era. Beauchamp's provocative iconography employs popular culture, satire, and stereotypes in service of visual political commentary. To find out more about this project and Vusi's collaboration at the David Crid Workshop, visit the David Crid portal and online viewing rooms. Enjoy!
One of my largest works, titled The Tempest, but the idea was to play around with the term Tempest, Shakespeare's book Tempest. So the title is Term Pest. So I'm playing around with the idea of, you know, autocratic governments where almost the term of a president, where in democratic countries it's usually 5 years. So in Africa there's a history of this so-called of term pests, where it's autocratic or sometimes military rulers, where they just take over and, you know, basically rule for over 40 years or until they die. So I sort of like play with the idea of term pest, where the story as well is a bit of, you know, terrible consequences to a certain degree. So just using those words, just playing around with those words, sort of like to highlight these two things that are happening at the same time. So the work, as well, I play a lot with iconography of Mickey Mouse sort of being a cartoon character that was in the same time present with the blackface cartoons that were very popular in the 1930s, and, you know, with reference to the Jim Crow era in America, where, you know, certain folks were depicted to a certain degree non-human, more of caricatures, playing a role, and not an important role, but more of an entertainment role in the real world, where they're just basically puppets to a certain degree. So I play with that, especially more of in a context of South African politics and history, where all these themes of superior, inferior, human, not so human, and all that, the stereotypes that have been placed on people, where it's still much more relevant even today. I employ such elements of this entertainer, where she put bananas to sort of like represent an idyllic paradise of Africa, somewhere where, you know, besides banana being a very interesting symbol to a certain degree, where it's, you know, where a certain animals enjoy it more, where other people are likened to certain animals, with the same thing, the banana just becomes a weapon as well, an idea of control in the media sense, where it is played upon, you know, sort of to characterize certain folks as well. As in a few years back, where there was an uproar where a young black child had a t-shirt or a hoodie on saying the coolest monkey in the jungle, you know, people became more aware of this sort of these little nuances of that are inspired by this type of iconic symbols that have been used throughout, you know, from the movies to adverts, you know, to sort of like stereotype certain folks. With this work, I use a lot of as well popular South African iconography that's like the Protea, where it's sort of like symbolized once upon a time, you know, like a unity in South Africa with sports. But in this case, I've used a Venus flytrap devouring the Protea. So I play with the idea of the Venus flytrap being a new invading species in a way, or in a context of South African politics, where the liberator becomes actually perpetrator, the opposite of what we're supposed to do. I play with the idea of the beauty of the beast, you know, in relation of a beautiful country, a But South Africa is a very beautiful country, beautiful people. But what it seems to be the beast of it, it's the history of it, the history of the land, you know, as in like the land as beautiful as the gold that it holds, at the same time it holds the remains and the bloodstains of the history that we've been part of. So the beast and the beauty, or the beauty and the beast, it's sort of like putting all these two elements together, and where the so-called miracle country, you know, thanks to the release of Mandela and what came after Mandela, you know, it sort of like distorted the idea of the beautiful land, our land, you know, the peaceful land, where in reality, you know, there's people with bad intentions, sort of beastly intentions. So I sort of like took this phrase or whatever from them. Everyone knows that book, The Beauty and the Beast, so I thought it'd be interesting to sort of like tie it in with a South African context. The caricatures that, you know, Mickey Mouse and the sort of like the little Coon cartoons that were there in the 1930s, where they were very popular, you know, long red lips and all these type of things, and where just folks were turning to this type of characters, where they're just seen as characters that don't really have nothing more, just entertainment. In South Africa, you see it more in a way of, you know, glorifies a certain way of black people showing themselves in a way, sort of like at the same time plays with a stereotype that's been already placed on that. So you wonder, is it a new thing or something that's just seeped in into our consciousness to a point where we think it's normal. We think this is the way we're supposed to behave, this is the way we're supposed to be seen or represent ourselves. There's a lot of that type of commentary in that cartoonish type of thing. You know, even movies, I mean, we can talk about Leon Schuster's movies. I mean, people still watch them. I mean, we're laughing at ourselves. But when you look at the movies, you know, there's always that type of little creatures, you know, like little midget type of thing, with their faces painted black in a way, made, you know, accentuated to look much more darker, you know, to play with the idea of the savages are here type of thing, you know. But it's something that's always been played upon, you know, in the movies, especially in the South African movies and all these type of characters that, you know, creepy and low people like that. The title of this work, Trojan Horse, taken from the famous Trojan Horse story. In this case, once again, I play around with the, you know, references from history and try to convey them more in a South African context once more, but at the same time, sort of like taking away from the story and linking to what's happening with the South African politics and social life. In this case, I've an outline of a horse in a way where it becomes a creature of some sort, where it's just full of all these things, where, as in a Trojan horse, it was full of enemies, but that outside it was just a beautiful, you know, object or horse, you know. And at the same time, where I play around with the idea of a bee or a being playing, at the same time the idea of bee, where it sort of like was meant to save or to sort of like equalize poverty, you know, between the black people of South Africa and the white people. I think more of the idea was to sort of like bring in financial, I think, liberation, where at the same time it just become another Trojan horse to a certain degree, where it's just something that can be admired from outside or worshipped, but inside it's just another full of snakes, cobras, and all these dangerous elements in there. Within the title of the Trojan Horse, I'm playing with the idea of, with words, text again, talking about free for all or free fall. So I'm playing with words as well, where they, you know, help to illustrate the points that I'm trying to drive through with this work. As in most of the works, I continuously use a bit of iconography from the history, where like this image of these characters of the black faces. Once upon a time, they were normal and nothing wrong was seen about using this caricatures to define or to symbolize other people. But at the same time, these caricatures, they are not always playing a sort of like a naive little character in his books or comic books and stuff. They always have a sinister intentions at the same time, you know, where they just want to cook white folks in a big pot, I don't know, carrots. But besides that, it's sort of like this sort of caricatures are still very much more alive, especially in the worldview of Africans, as seen with the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, there was an interesting interview on TV where I think it was a French scientist talking about testing out vaccines in Africa, you know, like they've done before, you know, where this sort of caricatures sort of like pop up in a different way, but still there. So reminiscent of when in America, you know, when young black men were tested on, especially for syphilis, where it's particular history in America where all these type of experiments were always accompanied by this type of imagery that's sort of like, you know, sinister little guinea pigs type of ways. So in this work, having all these little iconic images that I carry a certain story, you know, to sort of like put the artwork, I mean, the characters into context of what's happening in the real world. Besides we looking out, they're looking in as well. So I try to put a bird's eye view of these stories and all these together. The title of this work, The Great Feed, it's a reference to the news feed that we are constantly being programmed to sort of absorb, almost becoming like a propaganda feed where, as seen on TV, you know, once a year when we have to remember a certain part of our history of South Africa, of the apartheid history, where, as in its case, the June 16 massacre of black students that were massacred and mowed down in Sharpeville. With this painting, I tried to juxtapose the idea of a religious performance or a religious rite where, you know, a pope will have a bit of a speech and feed people certain things, and there's like smoke in the air. So with this work, I try to sort of bring these two different worlds together, but they all have something in common, you know, as in this figure where there's a lot of people will see representing, you know, a dying Hector Peterson or something like that, if I'm sure, and someone will see a, you know, sort of like a redone or a new interpretation of the Pieta of Mary holding a dying Jesus, you know. But at the same time, you know, there's two tragic stories to a certain degree, you know, either you're a Christian or you're a descendant of Hector Peterson or the folks that were affected by the massacre. I draw most of my inspiration from these type of interesting stories where they seem they don't have a link, but there's something that puts them together to make a story that can tell us more about what we're experiencing, especially in a context of South Africa, in a way. Where else the Pieta can be a monument to be worshipped and remembrance of some sort, or to, you know, to Christians or non-believers or whatever. Where in South African context, the image of Hector Peterson, it has become a symbol of not much of enlightenment, but of oppression to a certain degree, where it's only used certain time in a year to sort of like, to point fingers and at the same time hide what's happening in the backdrop, where people are still unemployed, certain degree. There's still mass looting where millions and millions of dollars disappear, you know, where they're meant to help the people, you know, to build schools, build more hospitals, but it's something that just never seems to happen to a certain degree. There's always things disappearing, money disappearing, And always the idea of demonizing others always comes to play every time we look at our history. It's not more of education or to sort of talk about the underlying problems of what happened and what the effects are still doing today. Instead of sort of like trying to have a conference or have a bit of a way of addressing all these past imbalances, past histories, or the idea of schooling in itself, education system, where it's super neglected, you know, in South African context. Because I've, you know, as South African, I've witnessed such things, not this sort of like this type of craziness of massacres. So this imagery, it's more of a more popular side of things, TV programs, you know, the TV feed or the propaganda feed, where sometimes the line gets very blurry. You just don't know what is what anymore. It just becomes a little bouquet of entertainment. With this figure here, I decided to utilize the idea of roses as sort of like a necklace, where, as everyone knows in the history of South Africa, there was a culture of certain degree of, unlike in America, where lynching was sort of like a part of something else, driven by hate and, you know, and all sorts of things. In South Africa, apartheid South Africa, people were necklaced, sort of like with a tire over their necks, and satellite if they were suspected of being an askari of some sort, someone that sort of like informs the then police, apartheid police, about their political activities, where it's not much spoken about, the culture of necklacing. So it's sort of playing with the idea of the rose and how, you know, Christ has always been likened to a rose, you know, like, you know, a symbol of a rose. The tire, the necklace of the tire necklace, has become sort of like almost like a salvation of ridding of something that's being opposing, of something that guy stood for in a way. I don't know, peace, love, and that. So in the history of that, the whole thing of necklacing, it's something that it's completely was invented by black folks, you know, to sort of to deal with these sort of, you know, people deemed to be traitors. At the same time in America, you know, news hangings were sort of like, you know, to teach, to make example of, you know. This work is titled Saints and Sinners. It's sort of like a play on this old notions of what makes a saint and what makes a sinner, you know. As in some books will say, we're all sinners anyway. I suppose the idea of a saint is the one that sort of like becomes an attire where one gives himself for a bigger cause, sacrifice for a bigger cause. I wanted to reference a monk that sort of like sets himself on fire in a protest, brutality and all these things that were happening in this country. You know, in a country like South Africa where, you know, still brand new freedom or liberated people, where, you know, where we are looking for new gods to say, new saints, you know, to sort of represent us in a so-called new world where now we are free to be a human, a person, you know. The idea of saints and sinners is sort of like inspired by the whole idea of the abstract notion of what, who owns what, the land, the sand, whatever, the gold, whatever, the ownership of it, or in a sense, who stole what, who's the sinner, and who took what, who saved who liberated who. I sort of like wanted to sort of illustrate a bull as well, but becoming more abstract, the idea of our president bought a bull for 20 something million once upon a time, you know, a very absurd, you know, amount of money in a country where there's poverty everywhere. But in comparison of this work, it's more of a stunted, liberated figures that sort of like turn him to be human. At the same time, they're trapped in this weird abstract world where it almost feels robotic in a way, where because it's like being a new program that's been programmed into this new people in this new land. But at the same time, you know, the dinosaurs sort of represent the soil, the rock, you know, the beasts that once roamed the land, the beasts that once mowed down young people for fighting for the freedom of speech, the freedom of expressing themselves in their own language. So it's sort of like all these fossils that are still there, you know, where they show themselves in different ways, they come up in different ways, but at the same time, they relate more to the idea of we want more, we are new, you know, we've been owed something, you know. Where is it? You know, at the same time, we're standing on the land where it does not offer any solution, but conflict in a way that it will not resolve the current issues that we're dealing with. So the idea of we want more, it was inspired by we won't move, and the idea of we want more. So it's sort of like from the dinosaurs of, you know, they're from the bones of we won't move, the remains of what we won't move, to the realization of now we have survived that, but we want more. The conflict within the more is it's something that's been stolen anyway. The idea is to find peace in nothing, or the idea of there is nothing for you until you want more out of yourself. So it's sort of taking a very, very difficult conversation and sort of like trying to put it together into a way that it can inspire conversation rather than conflict. As in, some of the phrases, once again, the text that I use, you know, are from the, you know, the popular sites, as in TV, popular news, where terms like it's our time to eat are actual words from some ministers a few years ago that, you know, we've been poor for too long, it's our time to eat, like to justify the looting of the funds that are meant to help build hospitals, schools, you know. So it's sort of like all these layers of the history, you know, succumbing, surviving, protests, massacres, and to getting to a point where the idea of freedom is starting to crumble down and become something that can be molded into any little shape of beast that one can imagine in order to eat, you know, to take and consume. So that's why the idea of robotics, sort of like reprogramming a program, sort of like new creature in this new free world, is supposed to do, or supposed to look like, or act like, or become like something that's more acceptable in the human world.